hold on to your butts. It's time for a new episode of Destroy All Culture, a sonic death ray from Dimension X that sounds exactly like a weekly podcast hosted by Adam P. Nave and Aiden Morgan. Exposure to Destroy All Culture is 100% fatal, so we put it on the internet. Now listen and die. Lethal effects may take up to 75 years. And welcome to Destroy All Culture episode 80 with Aiden Morgan and me, Adam P. Nave.
New mic.
I also realized that before we record, I always have like a bump of a few seconds so that when I edit it, you know, I know where to pick up the file and put in the music. But for some reason, I obsessively always tell you, like, I'll just take a few seconds here, as if this is a new thing. As if you're, like, unaware that I'm about to do this.
It's like, wait a minute, what is going on this time? This is, I know you've been doing this the same way 80 plus times, but who knows?
Right? So anyway, a lot of stuff. I saw Atomic Blonde and Valerian. You have seen neither.
I have seen neither. But in a sense, haven't I seen them?
Kind of, actually. Well, yes. Kind of. And that's a thing that we will, in fact, discuss.
Nice.
Also, you know, we have other stuff coming up. Let's just jump in with Atomic Blonde then, because it's a movie.
It is a movie, and I'll never forget your mini tweet review. Saw Atomic Blonde, enjoyed Atomic Blonde.
You know, it's one of those things where, like, whenever I end up like leaving a movie theater, I know that you and me are going to talk about it. Mm-hmm. And because I can now buy tickets in advance and have, like, you know, reserved seating and all that, I've gone back to seeing movies, like, opening night.
Right.
And so it's like, you know, again, on Thursdays, like, so, like, technically, like, preview showing, sort of, technically, you know, open, like, 7 on Thursday.
Right.
And I don't want to spoil, like, I know I hate that, like, that early, like, you can't just spoil anything for anyone, you know? Mm-hmm. So my little tweets of, like, I get a movie is just basically, like, I like this, or I did not, you know, and that's it. Like, that's all I'm ever going to give you. So yeah, Thursday, you know, I wasn't able to watch Valerian opening weekend last weekend. We didn't have a show. I was up in Seattle with Laura. Did not get to see Valerian. But caught Atomic Blonde, you know, opening on Thursday, and then Friday turned around and saw Valerian.
Right. So where did they, like, two together, did they encapsulate the sum total, like, peak movie viewing experience possible to you?
There was a spectrum of movie experience going on here. You know, Atomic Blonde is set in the last days of the Berlin Wall.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly in, you know, Berlin. So it's like hyper-stylized.
Yeah.
And not in the way that John Wick was, although occasionally, but just one of these, it's hyper-stylized for the era. You know, a lot of the title cards and all this are, like, spray-painted.
Okay.
Like, over the scene. Oh. You know, it's all, like, there's a lot of neon, it's kind of interesting for that alone. It has a great soundtrack, and this is one thing that's actually pissing me off right now, is that the soundtrack, there must be some sort of deal, is apparently available on iTunes, but I don't buy shit on iTunes.
Fair enough.
And is available as a CD, but listed as an import on Amazon, but I can't buy it as an MP3.
Oh.
And it's not that it has, like, the greatest soundtrack ever. I mean, it's a very 80s soundtrack. You know, it has, like, Bowie's Cat People on it. It has George Michael's father figure, which is actually a great music cue in the movie.
I can imagine.
Yeah. So it has, like, a lot of, like, good, like, 80s, you know, right around then.
Right.
Of music.
No, you mentioned John Wick, but I believe this is directed by one of the co-directors of the first John Wick.
Yes.
Am I right? Okay.
Yes, and the Lydia, who's also doing Deadpool 2.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
So,
that's actually a good idea.
You know, and you can see that, like, he was the one who has all the style, in a sense.
Ah.
So, like, John Wick, because, like, he didn't work on John Wick 2.
Right.
Like, he didn't help out on John Wick 2. And John Wick 2, as much as I like John Wick 2, wasn't quite as cohesively, painfully stylized like the first one was.
Which pretty much is the movie. I think Wick, the style, is the movie. I don't think you can.
Yeah, I mean, I like, don't get me wrong, I like John Wick 2, but it just didn't have that same, like, just obsessive detail.
Exactly, yeah.
For style. And Atomic Blonde has it. You know, if you're wondering which one of them did that.
Now we know.
Here's the thing. It's like, Charlize Theron is fantastic. We all know this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she loves doing action stuff. She can do kind of like the cold spy thing. Like, she's great. There is no doubt in anyone's head that she's going to be perfect in this role. It co-stars McAvoy.
Right.
And I remember, you know, early days, like, I was never a big McAvoy fan. You know, he had that kind of... I don't know. He had this weird bit of something that didn't quite work for me.
Fair enough.
He has grown out of it.
Oh, that's nice. So, good.
His character in this is kind of this complete asshole, you know, and he sells it, and it looks like, and his character's supposed to be having fun with it a lot of times, but he looks like, honestly, like, you believe he's having a lot of fun making this movie.
Very good.
Which, yeah, really helps, you know?
I remember the first time I ever saw McAvoy in anything, or maybe I thought, I think Danny Boyle, like, probably created this person out of whole cloth, and he escaped from his movie.
I had never thought of it that way, but holy shit, yes, he was a Danny Boyle creation. I'm trying to think of the first thing I saw him in, like, I'm looking to his IMDb really quick. He was in that. But, I mean, in terms of, like, personally just me watching him and stuff, I think the first thing I saw him was Wanted, which doesn't help, because...
Ooh. Yeah.
You know, and then his X-Men stuff is... It's X-Men stuff. Like, he's not going to get out of it, you know? Alive. No one gets out of X-Men movies alive.
That's right.
But, No, this is a, like, perfect role for him. And actually, thinking about it now, he kind of comes across like this weird Danny Boyle spy. So, I don't know. Maybe he was created by Danny Boyle in a lab. I don't know. I can't prove otherwise.
That's right. It was a film lab. Boyle was developing some film. Something got into the mix, and it popped James McAvoy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it also has, among other people, John Goodman and Toby Jones.
Yeah. There's the cast in that movie looks pretty phenomenal. Like, it's like
they're all just so perfectly cast.
Exactly.
Like, I mean, just perfect casting across the board. Everyone just sings in their roles. It's a lot of fun. It's my issue with the movie, besides the soundtrack issue, which is annoying, because I'd like to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I pass, you know, I'm not going to order a CD from Amazon. If I pass by, there's a music store I go to here, because I still do like music stores, because you find weird shit.
Yeah.
We've talked about this before. Like, you can't really browse on Amazon the same way.
No, you can't. You need the physical... You need a physical space, and that's make discoveries that way. It's true.
Yeah. No, here in Portland, we have a store called Music Millennium, which I'll happily take you to if you're ever in Portland. And it's a great, like, CD store that has records, of course, because vinyl is a thing now again. But they have, like, a ton of listening stations and... Oh, great selection, and they sell used stuff. So it's like, I find shit there that I'm just like, holy crap. You know, like, I found, like, one of the, like, first Stars CDs last time I was there, you know.
Oh, nice.
Right. So anyway, so I figure I'll just, I know they have it in stock, and next time I pass by there, I'll stop in and buy it. But no, the thing was, and this is a thing, really, in the original comic, too, is that there's kind of one or two twists too many. Like, after a while, the movie doesn't know when to stop.
Right.
Which is my only real big problem with the third act, is it doesn't quite know when to stop.
So it's, you're satisfied, and then suddenly there's more, and then there's more, and you're like, oh.
Right, and you're like, yeah, we could have actually stopped at the first one, and it would have been okay. And I get why you don't want to, because you want to complete this one little bit, but you didn't need to. And putting, like, one in between that and the end is just like, okay, enough.
Right.
Does
Sophia Boutella unleash an alternate universe machine and cause the Berlin Wall not to come down?
No. But she is also great in this.
I believe so. I've never seen anything where Sophia Boutella is not great.
I wish she actually had a slightly bigger role, because when she's on screen, she just does so much with kind of not much there.
Fair enough.
Like, the role is kind of thin, but she makes the most of it.
Right. She was definitely...
It's a very fun...
Sorry, I was going to say, she was definitely my favorite thing in Star Trek Beyond.
Yeah, she was fantastic in that.
Yeah.
And yeah, so this kind of continues the trend. She's absolutely great. And like Star Trek Beyond, without that much to actually do, she can just inhabit, even under all that makeup, she can like inhabit a character and just with her eyes and body language give you a whole lot more than on a page.
Exactly.
So no, Atomic Blonde is, I gotta say, like, I really do recommend, it's very highly stylized. There are a few bits of physics in there that I'm like, that doesn't, like, someone gets, like, a face wound and it doesn't bleed.
Oh.
And I'm like, you know, obviously there should be gushing blood, but when you see it, you're like, okay, I get why they chose not to when you see the whole scene, because it would have created issues.
Right.
And, like, reshoot issues, and you understand it. Some of the action scenes are amazing, if only because, you know, obviously they're all throwing down. They hired actual stuntmen for a lot of this to be the actors. And Charlize Theron throws down happily. So there's one that's like, you know, there's like a huge, like a 4-minute fight scene. Not all one take, although one take was like 2 minutes long.
Oh,
that is just endlessly brutal and just has people like just getting up and kind of gasping for breath and like standing wobbly. It's amazing. Shout out to the guy in our row who giggled weirdly at every single fucking thing in the movie.
Oh, okay.
Like, someone says a funny line, he giggles. Someone gets hit in the face with, like, a frying pan, he giggles. I'm like, just, you're weird, stop it.
Have normal responses.
Yeah, I'm just like, what's, like, it was very obviously that, like, weird, uncomfortable response.
Mm-hmm.
Laughter, and I don't know. But no, it's very hyper-stylized. For an action movie, it is reminiscent of 80s action movies in a lot of ways. In terms of things like gratuitous nudity, for instance, was like 80s level stuff going on there.
Oh, nice.
Which was interesting. And not like in like, ooh, boobies, you know, but like just in the, because the visual language of action movies has kind of moved on from that.
Right.
So it's interesting to watch them play with it in a modern sense.
Hmm.
So it doesn't, you know it's gratuitous. You get it's gratuitous. But it also tells you a bit about character. Because they're also doing it smartly. It's like, there's a bit of cultural whiplash. I enjoy it. You know, well played, people. You know, and because it is in Berlin and it's supposed to be the last days of the wall, and they kind of make a joke of that early in the film. They're like, this isn't that story. But there's always, like, a TV on in a lot of scenes showing you news reports.
Right.
To kind of keep you grounded in space and time. But yeah, no, it's a fun little spy thriller. Like I said, the end kind of makes me go like, just, yeah. But it's still like a good, fun, like, you can't trust anyone, and how's this all going to go down, and who's betraying who, and, you know, it's like, who's looking for the microfilm, because there's, you know, microfiche involved, because of course there is.
Yes.
And, you know, there's guns, and it's a fun time. And, you know, again, I might be a sucker for the song, but using Cat People as a music cue is a great fucking song for that, because it has a wonderful build.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, they have that. There's one bit of, like, there's one bit of nonsense, sort of, that feels like you get this, like, weird, slow scene of just a thing, and then you cut somewhere else. And it feels like, wait, the thing I just watched has no relationship to anything? And then near the end of the movie, you suddenly realize what was going on with it. Like, why it was important that you see it then. So that was nice, because it really did take... I'm like, just... Because it... I don't know. It still, I think, could have maybe used a little bit more editing on like, that little moment. But that's nitpicky. Anyway, yeah, Atomic Bomb was a lot of fun. And then I saw Valerian.
And? Tell us about Valerian.
Well, you'll be happy to know that fun level of French racism is alive and well.
Oh, goody. Goody, goody, goody.
You know, Besson has had an issue with that for his entire career.
Right.
And translating old 60s French comics, guess what you're going to run into?
Of course.
So, you know, you have your, like, native race in the beginning, so you're, like, native, and they're at one with nature, and they're just peaceful savages type of thing. But their dress code is very much coded to be like, you know, it's like one of the African races before, you know, we taught them something type of weirdness, except yeah. they're all also like bright, shiny white, which is even weirder. And then there's like another like race that's very much like, look at these African tribesmen type of race, except they're all big and ugly and lumpy and brown and stupid. And it's just like, oh, Jesus Christ, really? So there was, like, it never quite, I mean, I'm lucky. It didn't offend me to the point where I checked out of the movie completely because of it.
Right.
But the second time around, it really came close, to be honest.
Yeah, well, it's...
Because it was just, like, he brushed right up against, like, truly and deeply offensive stereotypes.
Well, you know, that's, yeah, that's Bisson for you. And, you know, I mean, with Bisson, like, the sort of, you always get, like, sort of the profound and the really interesting, like just brushing up against the completely ridiculous, and you're like, I'm not sure if he has control over any of this, but he's not going to stop. That's all.
Right. Now here's the thing about this movie. Now, you know, and I'm gonna nerd cred this out. I am a huge Bisson fan.
Yes, you are probably the biggest Bisson fan that I know.
Yeah, I am so in the bag for Bisson, it's not even funny, right? Like, I have watched his fucking Joan of Arc movie more than once. That 3-hour mistake of a film.
That is the mark of a true fan.
Yeah, you know, it's like I've seen Taxi and Subway, for God's sake.
Holy moly.
I own a copy of Deep Blue. Like, I'm a Bisson fan.
Deep Blue is a great film. Anyway, yeah, that's...
I mean, you know, like Wasabi, that. Which is one of my favorites. It's Bisson making fun of Bisson.
Yeah.
But this is, at times, an amazing mess.
Mm-hmm.
Like, now, he says it's for his father, and I'd heard something about his father dying. I don't know if it's true. But that might explain it. It was just... It feels like this was a movie, made for fans of a 1960s French comic, and it's kind of, at times, you're supposed to know stuff about the characters, because they're never really given any character development.
Right.
They're just cut out one and cut out two. And it kind of feels like coming into the Marvel movies by watching Civil War first, and having never heard of the characters.
Yep, I get that. So, yeah, and for, like, a North American audience would have no real connection with Valerian.
Right. Now, it also feels like he took a bunch of, like, side stories from the comics and made those, too. There are a bunch of things that feel like side quests, which, for the most part, you could cut out completely. Like, the beginning, after, like, kind of the opening, when you first get to Valerian and Laureline, there's, like, this whole heist quest, which is really well done, frankly. It's visually the entire movie, first of all, is visually stunning. He spent, like, $200, $250 million in this fucking movie, and every inch of it is on screen. Now, lost a ton of money. This is a huge failure. Don't get me wrong. And it's a shame, but I get why. But, like, let me see how much this thing is lost. Jesus. Oh, good God. Yeah, like, and Box of Mojo's claiming the production budget's 170, and it's like, no, it was like 225. Everyone knows it. Worldwide, yeah. It hasn't opened foreign yet, so it's just domestic gross. Is $25 million.
Oh my God.
They yikes is right. So that's a huge problem. But again, every cent is on screen. Like, it is just endlessly pretty. But they're all, like, they're the side quests. It's like the opening one is a lot of fun. Some of them are kind of fun, but, like, some of the later ones are completely useless. Like, they move a character from A to B, but you really didn't need to do that to move them from A to B.
Fair enough.
And you feel like it was just like, oh, this is a fun story that he read in the comics once that he wanted to do. There's an interesting movie in there. Like, his overall point and his overall, like, concept is sound. But the script desperately needed another pass. There are some lines that are so, like, college freshman screenwriting class 101.
Ouch.
That if I didn't know better, I'd be like, oh, this is a translation problem. Like, they're clunk. I mean, seriously, that bad.
Wow.
Especially near the end. It's just, oh man, there's some dialogue that was just cringeworthy to sit by. And then there's a whole lot of fun. You know, I mean, that's it's like there is a whole lot of fun. It is overall a very pretty movie that is a lot of fun to watch. It just, again, the dialogue is often so painful and the characters are so underbaked that you don't really care. And then there's this whole like mystery and who's this thing? And it's not really hard to solve, but you never really get emotionally invested in it because there aren't enough characters to hang it on.
Right.
It
sounds to me like Rihanna's appearance in the movie is fairly small.
Well, yes, and it's one of those side screens that you could completely excise every scene she's in and not really lose anything. But she's a hell of a lot of fun to watch, and she does a really good job. Like, her scenes are great, and the character's a lot of fun, but useless to the story, and that's okay if you're doing something amazing, but it fell really short. Which is, again, it's a shame. You know, Rucker Hauer is in it for literally, like, 45 seconds.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, there's a lot of that. Like, Ethan Hawke is in it for, like, a scene. It's just, it's weird. Like, he has this huge cast that doesn't do anything.
Huh.
You know, there are bits where you're just like, there's a scene that you forgot to put in the movie somewhere.
It doesn't, in some ways, it doesn't feel like it's worth going to see it in the theater, but, I mean, given the visuals,
it might be,
but that might be the only reason to see it. So there might be, so it might not be worth seeing, like, on a Netflix screen.
I would say it is, in the same way, like, Fifth Element, it's still pretty, even on a smaller screen.
Okay.
It's worth seeing if you like Bassan at all.
Which I do.
Which you do. But, you know, fair warning, this movie will occasionally make you twitch and just want to just re-record some of the dialogue, if nothing else. And again, like, it's not that it's terrible, because it's not. Like, I mentioned I saw it last night. I was like, this is the thing that I saw. Like, that was my entire take. I was just like, yeah, I saw this. And I instantly had people going, oh, yeah, no, I've heard it's like a total piece of shit. And I'm like, no, no. It is not a total piece of shit. It is really a huge step backwards for Bassan. You know, he's capable of so much more than this. But it's still a very watchable piece of cinema.
Yeah.
It's just also aggressively simplified and stupid.
Okay, I kind of figured, you know, I didn't read any of the reviews because I thought most critics are probably going to give it a bad review because they're just, because Bassan's sensibility is just, there's something about it that a lot of critics just don't seem to jibe with it.
Right.
So I'm like, I'm not even going to read anything.
And as always, a lot of it is there's a French cinematic sensibility to it that a lot of American audiences don't appreciate.
Right,
is fair, you know.
But it really, in some ways, from what you're telling me, it really does remind me of the comic. I mean, and just from the looks of the trailers, I'm like, it's a really faithful sort of psychedelic remake of the comics. So I'll go see it. I think this will be my, this might be what I'll see in like a second run theater, because it'll probably show up. There's a second run theater in town, and it'll probably be there. It's probably there already if it's doing as badly as you say.
Yeah.
Which is kind of great.
I mean, to give you an idea, like it opened up last Friday. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
In the movie theater I'm in, it's already in limited showings, like 2 2D showings and 2 3D showings a day in their smallest theater. Week later. That's a terrible fucking sign. Now, while I say that, keep in mind that the theater was packed. So they were right to do it, because like that's the audience size they're getting. But they're still getting an audience.
Right.
So, you know, I'm like, I can't fault them for the move, because it was objectively the right move.
Right.
And good on the theater for, like, judging that correctly. But, yeah, no, just, I can't. Like I said, I can recommend it. Like, again, if you're a Bassan fan, go. You'll enjoy it for, like, the Bassan bits and, again, endlessly pretty. And it's aggressively stupid. It's, yeah. It's like, what if he wanted to do Fifth Element and forgot to make you give a damn?
Okay. Yep, I get you.
And also did not have people who were as charming as Bruce Willis, which is another big blow. Like, I think if his male lead, whose name I can't remember.
Dane DeHaan.
Thank you. If he had gotten somebody who had that kind of the swagger actually needed for the role, the movie would have been better by leaps and bounds.
Fair enough. Yeah, I mean, I like Dane DeHaan and Cara Delevingne in certain roles. I think they're fine, but maybe they're not really gonna. I mean, they look like Besson characters, but I'm not sure if they would. Like you said, they don't really have the charisma and the swagger for this.
Yeah, it's. I don't know what the issue is. Yeah, it's a shame. You know, you know, if you just want something like big and shiny to go watch, totally, there it is.
Oh, awesome.
If you're looking for like, oh, I really like Fifth Element, I want something that, you know, connects and has like it a very Besson like love story and, you know, a whole lot of like fun and world building. It's like this has some world building and it does a good job of that. Kind of. Also, there was a whole lot of weird, like, butt humor in this. That has to be from the comic. It was just so weird.
Weird butt humor. I love that.
Yeah, it's like, you know, well, you have to, like, you know, do this thing and, like, put this jellyfish on your head. It's like, okay, where does that, like, that's not its head. You know, it's like, okay, fine, look, haha, put your head in a jellyfish's ass. Like, why? Fine.
Why? Because why not? Just because.
There was like a weird amount of that. But yeah, so I don't know if I can really recommend it as much as say I wouldn't avoid it, if that makes sense.
Do not avoid. Okay. That's all I need. It's an official do not necessarily avoid right here.
You know, I still think the movies of the summer are still probably Baby Driver, Wonder Woman, and Spider-Man in that order.
Yeah, I think you're right. All of which I've seen. But I have seen another, like, feel-good summer movie.
Uh-huh.
Dunkirk.
I knew you were going to say that. I had a feeling.
You had a feeling? Well, I thought I would briefly talk about Dunkirk. Partly because I saw it on a proper film IMAX.
Theater. Did you?
So in one of the few places in North America where you can actually see it. So you can see, I mean, so essentially you're looking at a gigantic square of like interchangeable young British men sort of standing around in lines and occasionally screaming and dying. I don't know, like a lot of people are going on about how Dunkirk is a masterpiece and so on and so forth. And as often happens with Christopher Nolan films, I find myself struggling to really like it.
I can understand that.
I mean, I appreciate what's being done on screen, but a lot of it, I just find myself. I think some of my basic sensibilities are at odds with the way Nolan likes to make movies, and I don't think that's going to change.
Right.
And it's a cleverly done film. It all takes place. Well, there's three threads or three stories in the movie. The first one is called The Mole, which refers to the pier off Dunkirk, and that one takes place over a week. Second is The Sea, which is the story of Mark Rylance as a sort of a weekend sailor who goes across the channel and to help out folks, to help out the boys in Dunkirk. And that takes place over a day. And the third is The Air, which is just basically Tom Hardy in a mask on a plane. which I'm like, Nolan, you've got a weird fetish. I don't quite understand.
Oh, man.
And that's just over the course of an hour as he crosses the channel and shoots down enemy planes to make sure that, you know, that they don't bomb the hell out of the boats trying to get away. And at the end, unsurprisingly, all the threads converge and all the, you know, and people rescue each other and so on and so forth. It's, I don't know, like the other thing is people are going on about Hans Zimmer's soundtrack being a masterpiece, and it is, but it's just unrelenting. Like there's absolutely there's no moment. Like there's literally two moments in the entire film towards the end when you do not have a like these like apocalyptic washes or pulses of sound. And I get it. I know what you're trying to do there. Like it's always the sense of like pulse pounding urgency, even when you know that there isn't supposed to be one. Nolan is still sort of going, "Oh, look out!" The undisputed worst moment of the film is when the little ships, the small boats, come to help out and pick up some men and bring them home. Because the music just begins to swell and begins to sound like, I think, like Elgar or something. And it's just a really corny and sentimental moment. But there aren't enough ships to actually make it work. It's just like, I'm like, you have like an IMAX camera, you have CGI, you can really exaggerate the number of little ships that are coming. But it still looks like about, you know, 5 or 6 boats. I mean, it's maybe more than that, right, but it really did feel like, where's this music coming from? Because those are just a few boats. There are hundreds of thousands of people on this beach. It's not going to work. But I think we're supposed to sort of be sort of buoyed up by the spirit, you know, evinced by the Brits who are willing. Right. I mean, most of the boats were conscripted, but nonetheless. So it's really... it's not a do not avoid. It is a movie worth seeing, but you should see it at least on an IMAX of some kind, even if not the full 70mm film IMAX, just to see what happens when, you know, Christopher Nolan is basically going to punch you in the face for 90 minutes.
That's fair enough. Also, I realized last Sunday, I'm sorry, I forgot your birthday. It was happy birthday.
Hey, thank you. It was my birthday.
Confused.
Didn't know what was going on. I was wandering around Seattle. Didn't know it was a birthday. Yes, my birthday was Sunday the 23rd. I didn't do much. I just went out with some friends in the afternoon and ate hummus and drank sangria.
There you go. That's all you need.
And it was all neat. And later on in the evening, Alain got back from New York. She was there. She was there for the weekend, doing some meetings and such. So yeah, it was a fine time.
So here's the thing. I was like, gonna mention, like, you know, Dark Tower opens next week, and I think I'm gonna go see it, even though I don't give a damn. I like Idris Elba.
Right.
But I realized just now, Pacific Rim 2 opens the same night. Like. The 4th.
Oh, my God, that's right.
It opens next week. Do they want anyone to go see it?
They really have not been advertising that one.
They just over San Diego, like San Diego Comic-Con weekend, which is like last weekend, did their first teaser.
Right. That makes no sense at all.
So
I think they've. I'm wondering if they looked at their slate of movies, the studio, and went, "This one will be for the fans."
I just I can't.
Which is crazy because you know.
I cannot figure out what the plan is there. If it's even actually,
I am kind of shocked. I knew it was coming at some point, but I didn't realize it was.
I mean, I see it listed. In one place, and I look somewhere else, and I don't see it listed. So,
well, maybe not.
I gotta figure this out.
But I sort of it's one of those films like the Pacific Rim sequel is the one I keep on forgetting.
Yeah, see, I see it released it on February 23rd.
It just sort of keeps on slipping my mind.
Which would make far more sense. But I'm looking at. Fandango, just because I can, like, you know, sign up to get tickets early. Pacific Rim 2 was listed there. Like, that is not actually a thing. They couldn't be.
Okay.
Could not be.
Yeah, because they don't even have a full trailer yet. Like, literally just like that, you know, Join the Jaeger Uprising, like, teaser. It looks pretty fun, though. I won't lie. I think this will be, like, a hell of a lot of fun to go see. As long as they bring out the sword chain that they had from the first movie. Yeah, sword chain.
It's a great thing.
It just reminds me of, like, shotgun axe.
But yeah, you know, whatever.
I don't know.
So, but Dark Tower opens up next week, and 2 weeks after that, of course, the Hitman's Bodyguard, which I did see a second trailer for. I want to say Valerian.
Oh.
No, thank God.
Were you subjected to another Blade Runner trailer?
No, I'm over it. I did get the same Geostorm trailer.
Oh, damn,
though.
I wanted to hear your howls of disgust and anger. Oh, well.
Which, you know, I was all like, yay! And I think I was the only person in the theater who was like, yay! Everyone else was just like, what the happy horseshit is this?
Oh, cool. That's gonna be...
Right, like, who the fuck is cheering? And...
That's right. And who's that guy who's actually happy?
Looks so bad. I can't wait.
But you got a cheer for Gerard Butler in space.
Oh, I'm sure it will be.
I know, it was terrible. I'm pretty sure that the Dark Tower movie is going to be pretty bad. Just even on its own merits. I have a feeling it's going to be one of those films that probably, like, some kind of, like, massive problems with shooting or budget
happened.
Aren't
they doing
so now it's a 90-minute
multiple
film
movies or something?
Like, really, it's only, like, a 90-minute film. When this is the kind of... Yeah. It's the kind of thing that you think would be, like, the two to 2.5 hour range.
I am in no way... Like, I don't, like... We discuss this. Like,
well, who knows? If they can only pull a 90-minute, you know, one out of all the material that they've got so far, so I'm not holding out too much hope. But then again, I'm not a big Dark Tower person.
Yeah.
So.
Wow, it really is 95 minutes. Holy crap!
Yeah, you have. There's no skin off either of
really
our
backs
on this, right?
I
think I read the first one, but it was. It kind of felt like
no, that's why
Stephen
being exciting.
King's trying
to
tackle genres
that
so many others have done better.
The only reason Laszlo's interesting because he read the books and he kind of likes the books.
Kind of like Ready
and
Player
And obviously,
One.
I drag his ass to shitty fucking movies I'm sure he never wanted to see in his life.
Isn't that crazy?
So he's allowed to do the same. It's only, you know, it's the roommate code when you go see movies
you know,
together.
But the good thing
like,
about
excited.
That is if
I
it's
won't
not
watch
a good film,
but, you know,
at least you don't have to spend too much time
play for. And I was like, well, whatever, it'd be 2 hours. Right.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm not against McConaughey. So, yeah. Sorry, I just
sure,
bought my tickets for Thursday,
sure.
In fact.
Yep.
I like living in the future. Sometimes I can buy movie tickets, like, from my phone really quickly.
Oh, totally. Yeah, no, I mean, Elba will sell the hell out of this role, no matter what.
Yeah. So, walking away from all the movie stuff, which neither one of us has seen the same fucking movie.
Like,
week.
That character, it's a good choice. No.
There were two episodes of Killjoys to catch up on. There was the what I like referring to as the prequel. Wah wah.
Oh, there you
of episode go. 4.
I know I'm a fan of that too. I gotta say. That's if the future.
Well, the idea
that
it is halfway through the season is what kills me. It's like,
dude.
Like how? Where are we going from here? Mm-hmm.
Yes. Very nice.
Yes, me too.
And then we have.
No, they just did it.
How the hell
in
is it?
A
that
really smooth way.
The last episode
that
was only
things
halfway
will come
through
back,
the season.
And no, it was gorgeous build. And I will say, I 10 episodes per season. I get it. And I'd rather they deal with it or not. But the, okay, we have all this like emotional baggage yeah. with Johnny and Dutch that we have to deal with, which is truth serum.
Essentially. I mean, these are true.
I think it was used well here because we only have 10 episodes.
I've seen. I mean, the pre one, actually, the one thing I really liked about the pre, about episode 4 was I thought it was going to be flashbacks. And I was very happy that they didn't do it like that.
Yeah. Oh, that was magnificent. And they even mentioned, like, you know, hopefully Pre didn't grow his hair out for nothing. And I'm like, holy shit, like, this is right. Okay. Like, does he just shave like, every 2 hours?
Yeah, I think that was all they could do. And I think, I mean, they've kind of pulled, in the first season, they kind of did something a little similar as well, where they were sort of stuck in a situation where they had to sort of tell the truth.
Yeah.
So it was sort of going, it was going back to that well a little bit. But it wasn't, but I did like the fact that what we thought we were going to get, like an episode
it was so perfectly killjoy,
turned out to be, to a large extent, about John.
And then this
Dutch.
Week, of course, we had you know, Attack
really
of the Rack.
Tom Allison's hair in that episode.
Yeah, that was just like, okay, well, I guess we actually have
that was fantastic.
Did you notice the change in the Killjoy screen?
Well, you just see him
in the
ship, he's bald, and then the next shot, they're on the ground, and he's got like this,
yeah.
like this curly
like, oh,
blonde
good
locks.
God.
Yeah, it's like, did it take a while to get there? Or... yeah, that whole thing was pretty grand. And I just barked out loud with laughter back at the moment
skills.
when he confronts you know the other guy, and they suddenly run at each other and start kissing. I was just like,
which hopefully is not a bad sign that she was
just
you know in some other strike team that didn't make
oh,
it.
Oh yeah, oh was it ever? Yeah,
I cannot imagine they would just do that off camera, you know. But
holy moly. They attacked
well,
the
I think some of this is the reality of TV budgeting. I don't know that we've had an episode yet with Zeph that also has Francie and Pri. It might just be a budget.
The war is all. Yeah. It was about time that, I mean, this confrontation had to come, but I love the fact that they basically got played. And they got played by that character who, and that character, I mean, he every time you see him in a television show, and it's always a Canadian science fiction television show, he's always a weasel. Always. And I was like, oh, he's still a weasel. Okay, good. So, we all have skills. No, I didn't see any.
No, but he's amazingly hysterical, isn't he?
In this one, though. Oh, no, they wouldn't do that. They wouldn't do that to Zeph.
Well, I'll tell you, like, you know, I at this point follow a bunch of the Killjoys, like, cast and,
like,
and all that,
hey,
and they're just
Zeph?
All, like,
just like,
genuinely, like, just
shot
excited
him, like,
to be in the show type of thing.
Oh, what do you know?
They're just all having such fun, which it bleeds into the show.
That is true, actually. Yeah. Yeah, budget or schedule.
Mm.
It's funny, I've started following... Sean Bake right. on Twitter, aka Fancy, and like you know that like characters and the actors that play them are not the same people.
That's funny thing because I've been rewatching
that sort of
Warehouse
actors
13.
Like to play sort of particular characters
keep,
or like
you know it's like
there's some
okay,
similarities between
Ashmore?
Who they are and
young
who they portray.
Ashmore. Like it's just
exactly.
Oh,
but I tell
fun.
You, just based on Twitter,
but,
on Twitter
yeah, no,
alone,
the show just
Sean Bake is nothing like
human
speeds nothing
and
like
never
Fancy.
Feel rushed.
he's really
including
nice.
Answering one question
yeah,
that I know I've
like
had
this,
for most
like,
of the season.
Funny,
I think we all have.
Like almost overly genuine, sincere
which is the
guy.
Can't
and it's
still
like,
explode people's heads.
Wow, that's not like what we see on screen at all.
But it's not one that you bust out because if anyone finds out.
Yeah.
So, right. So it makes sense that why he hasn't.
Oh, exactly.
I am also interested for following them.
I've never really followed any of the
which is nice.
Killjoys cast crew,
you know, even
for,
like Fancy
recently.
And Pre and all, like they're
all
getting their own character.
It was just a couple
arcs,
of tweets, and I said, "Oh, follow Michelle
Lovera, healthy sign,
and Emily Andrus from Another Herb." But then, when you begin to see like the other casting crew,
well, sure,
and like Aaron Ashmore is just I think he's a fan. I think he's just like a fanboy, like the rest of us, for this show. Oh yes.
Yes, and they haven't renewed anything else.
I admit. Yes. Yeah, it's.
Sorry. Yeah, no, they haven't renewed anything else, which is weird.
Which is. Oh yeah, I was actually wondering. Yes, I was wondering about that. I'm like, they're tied up. Johnny's being tortured. Is he going to bust out the exploding head trick?
Yeah.
Right.
We need to hit the 5-year mark with Killjoys. We just do.
Mm-hmm.
Right, that's the thing. She has a 5-year plan. So it's like, we need to...
I agree. Yeah. I mean, healthy for their longevity in the show, for one. And also just for the point of view of it being a show itself with legs, you know, that can
right. I'd
continue
rather have
onward.
The TV show.
So, you know,
and
if,
also
if
a comic
sci-fi would like to renew Killjoys, I'd be happy with that. Because I think they renewed Winona Earp. I know that much.
I just went and picked that up. Yeah, no, I forgot to pre-order it. And went down to Books with Pictures, which is a fantastic comic store in the Portland area, which everyone should go to. Grabbed, I think, their last copy.
I imagine Dark Matter will get
so
another season.
So y'all can't get it there today.
Seems to be like a bit of a popular show for them. So. Oh, definitely. Definitely. Well, didn't Lovretta say she had like a good 5 seasons planned out?
Yeah. No, it looks fabulous. I haven't had a chance to read it.
We need to see this plan. Because as much as I enjoy like reading like, you know, comics of canceled television shows, it's not my first choice.
Not this week's.
Exactly. Speaking of which, coming to me in the mail right now is Legends of Korra.
I'm running behind this week because of going to all these fucking movies.
I am very much looking forward to
trying to finish this novel.
Yeah, I've read a couple of reviews.
Been running behind. I'm behind on Preacher. I'm behind on everything.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much except for Killjoys.
Oh, nice.
Well, that People of Earth came back, so of course I was watching that. I love that show.
So basically, I'm gonna read the comic and pretend the show is still on. And,
yeah.
Also, that Korra and Sammy and the rest are all real people. That'll make me happy.
Yeah.
Oh, other question: Are you caught up on Winona Earp?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. So there's a sizable development this week. So, but I will. I will not spoil
by the end
it for
of
you.
Another few weeks, and I will be done with this novel. Yeah, I think we actually might end up having a podcast, possibly with a guest, on the day I'm trying to finish the novel. So that'll be funny. Either I will have just finished it, my brain will be completely fucking baked, or I'll be like, okay, I'm going to podcast and then kill myself. So how we doing?
Of course.
It'll be a good time either way.
I watched that as well. That was, I don't know why it reminds me of kind of, Well, it reminds me of shows like The Good Place.
Like, you know, hopefully
these sort of unassuming half-hour comedies with like very, very like unusual tones. Yeah, it's fantastic, and it's just, and the thing is that particular episode, that season opener, doesn't. You haven't seen the first season, I mean, it's still funny, but I don't think you can just go into it cold. So, I mean, it's.
No, no.
There's a lot of stuff happens.
Oh, one other thing, because we're getting close to the hour, we can probably just kill it early because we're kind of run out of things. But this week also premieres our new end music, which is both happy and sad for me. Because I love our really, like, bizarre, like, drunk clown music.
Woo!
It is. This one was written and played live by me. So when you hate it, you know who to blame. Yeah, no, when I actually, one of my cats, Watson, whenever I pick up a guitar or whatever, doesn't care if he's in the room, he'll just sleep.
One of my guitar's pants, leaves the room. Including Frank, to tune in for that one.
So,
just to see if Adam goes crazy.
Not subtle.
Hopefully it comes together. We like having the occasional guest on our podcast, and if this one works out, I think
you guys will all hear
fans
when we
of the shows that we like will be very pleased.
Should we cue
the
music?
That's all I will say.
Oh, I was asking if we should cue some music then, so they can hear the new music.
It was the week it was. Oh.
All right.
Oh, very nice. Why is it sad? That's true. That's true. But this one is a little more homegrown. There you go. Before a live studio audience. Or, no, not all. But excellent. Fair enough. He's not a fan. But too bad. Too bad for him. Oh, sorry, you're cutting out there, Adam. I can't hear you. Oh, yeah. Let's cue that music and so debuting for the first time music.